If you want insight and solutions, you're in for a unique experience. One where you're free to ask questions about where you're stuck, ask and hear questions of an everyday variety, global or personal, deep or ancient. All questions are welcome. Any human issue or problem is seen with a new awareness from Patricia's powerful understanding of whole brain thinking. Receive insights you never thought were possible, and be comforted to hear some insights you always knew were right. Discover the profound and the creative value that problems can give us. And now, Patricia's son.
Welcome to Trust the Problem. This is Patricia's son, and today on Trust the Problem, 2 days before Thanksgiving, I am going to talk about gratitude. And it's one of my favorite things. It's sort of second to animals. Whenever life is too heavy and the news is too dark or difficult or people are worried and things get overloaded, I always go to animals because animals always lighten our hearts and remind us of a connection that's very, very real. That's love that's not complicated by manipulation or trying to get something. It's just there. And so animals are so wonderful, and of course we can always be very grateful we have animals like dogs and cats and horses and all kinds of animals, actually, will give us a touch of that mystery, you know, a touch of that extra special part of the universe. And that's the flow, that's about love, that's about not controlling. And this is, of course, my philosophy. I'm always trying to teach this other ingredient to our intelligence that we block out, and I believe we block it out of our youngness, our immaturity as a species, and also because we haven't developed how to hold it exactly. We misunderstand it and fear it some of the time. And it's because we have immature logic and we have immature intuition. And when those two are immature, they don't work together very well. When they're mature, they do. That's almost one of the characteristics of it. And so that maturity and that synergy between the two styles of thinking of the hemispheres of the brain creates a different attitude. And we're finding scientifically, finally, what I've certainly been saying really all my life, and certainly in public life for the last 35 years, is that we are really able to heal ourselves, to generate love, and that attitude and how you feel has everything to do with your immune system and the wholeness of your body. And before holistic health existed, I was talking about holistic health because we really need to understand the mind-body-spirit connection, not just as a new thing now that everybody sort of knows about and says, but as a feeling, as a place of resonance. And gratitude is one of those things that places you in that frequency. That's why it is always healing. It always takes you out of a muddle. It'll always take you out of a gloom or a depression or feeling bad. If you begin to think of the things you can be grateful for, because there are far more things to be grateful for than to not be grateful for. I understand that the things that we're not grateful for are usually, you know, giving us a poke at the moment and stand out. But they stand out against a background of wondrous beauty and aliveness and possibility that life is. And to be grateful is just so healing and so empowering. And, you know, Carl Jung used to say, and I'm always talking about problems, this is Trust the Problem, and problems, we need to be grateful for our problems because they set us up to learn and know new things that nothing else in the world can set us up to learn or know. And I was just writing about this in my book this morning, that for every problem that stresses us, there are many, many solutions. And some are wonderful. And in fact, some solutions are absolutely transformative. They cause us to grow, to heal us in no other way can. And we need, and of course we will always have problems, but we need to think about problems differently. We need to think about problems above and beyond simplistic right, wrong, black, white, dualistic thinking, so that we can expand all the choices available. And that's our main hang-up. That's the main thing that keeps us from heaven on earth, because I used to say in my lectures many decades ago, there's only one thing that keeps us from having heaven on earth. And what it is we can't believe it. And one of the reasons we can't believe it is we think too simplistically, and we're stuck in our whatever problem we have, and we're mad about it, and we don't like it, and we're certainly not being too grateful then, usually. And it is an interesting phenomenon that when you begin to use your logic to be realistic about how much you have to eat, a good place to sleep, friends, fresh air, life itself. And those are just the elementary ones that for sure, you know, everyone has, or close to everyone. Not everyone does have. But when people even don't have some of those barest essentials of life, I find that they turn themselves to gratitude for what they do have, even if it's their dying breath. Because to be in a state of gratitude is to be in a state of reception, in a state of receiving the highest that the universe really gives. Because you're acknowledging it, you're setting up the frequency to it when you feel it. And that is a power that we all have that we tend to forget we have. And it's interesting at the time of holidays, particularly, but we often are uptight. You know, Christmas time, there's more suicides and all those awful statistics. And at Thanksgiving, too, it can be difficult because family comes together. There's a certain amount of stress. And, you know, especially for the person at whose home it is and who's cooking all the food, they're trying to get a lot of things ready. And one of the things, too, when family comes together, old patterns, old grudges, old fears, old wounds sometimes get opened. And all of that stuff is what causes Thanksgiving not to be so grateful. But if we really take a moment and think about it, we can really alter a lot of things. I'm being a little ahead of myself to tell the story, but it came up for the third time, so when that happens, I just do it anyway. It's an example from a workshop that I did years ago and years ago, and it never got taped because at that I taped almost all my lectures that I've done through the years. But this one, for some reason, I don't know, the machine wasn't working, and we didn't have it on tape, and it was shortly before Thanksgiving. And there was a man there, probably in his middle 40s, and he said something like, well, I just hate Thanksgiving. And I said, oh, really? Why do you hate Thanksgiving? And he said, well, more correctly, I hate going home. I don't dislike Thanksgiving. If I was having Thanksgiving with somebody else, I'd probably like it. But he said, I don't like going home. And I said, oh, okay, what is it about going home that you don't like? And he kind of, you know, and then he said, well, let me give you, you know, he said, first he said, I just get so stressed with my mother, and I just can't take it, and I don't know what to do, and I just end up getting angry. So I said, well, let's role play this. Let me be you be her, and give me an example, you know, of what might happen, and perhaps I'll give different responses. And that will show you that you do have power more than you think you do in the situation, and maybe it will turn out differently. So he kind of looked at me a little bit dubiously, but said okay. And then we started out by saying, he, as his mother says to me, you know, I'd like you to cut the turkey. And so me, I said, okay, I'd be happy to. And she says to him, well, you're using the wrong knife, and I don't want you to hold it that way, and I don't want you to cut it there, I want you to do it this way. What are you doing? I don't like it. I want you to cut it this way. And he goes into this sort of harangue, mimicking his mother, telling them that he's doing it the wrong way. And and not too nicely, kind of rudely, and repetitively. So I asked him, turned to him, and I said, well, you know, Mom, if you'd like to cut the turkey, you can, but if you'd like me to cut the turkey, you know, trust me, I can cut the turkey. And his eyes rolled back in his head when I said that. And he said, oh, my mother would be having a fit. She'd be yelling and screaming at me. And I said, well, if that's the case, then you wouldn't really have to hear too much of it because you would very calmly put down the utensils and get your coat and walk out the door. Because nobody... No, I left out an important piece. I'm sorry. One of the things that she'd answer when he said that I can do it, she'd say, don't you talk to me like that. And she'd start to give him a lecture that he shouldn't talk to her like that. And I'd say, I'm sorry, Mom. It's actually you who shouldn't be talking to me the way you're talking to me. And then he rolled his eyes back and said she'd just be screaming. And I said, well, you wouldn't have to hear too much because you'd be on your way out the door. And he looked at me sort of stunned. And I guess that's part of the problem, is that we have preconceived ideas, and they tend to be that old polarization setup of denial and despair. And first we're in denial and we accept and accept a lot of garbage. When we finally realize we can't do that anymore, we tend to feel so completely powerless we go into despair. And in between the denial and the despair are a million solutions, 1,000 ways to do it, and a few dozen ways that are miraculous, that are wondrous, that transform us and change us completely and heal people all around us and invent new ideas and set us on a new path. And it's all fabulous. So being grateful for being stuck or having a problem is because you are at the threshold of choosing something different. And to be happy about change instead of fearful about change. And of course, why wouldn't we be fearful about change? We only allow changes we absolutely can't control, and they tend to be, you know, because they're out of our control, not particularly something we want. We don't open to difficulties when they begin as an opportunity to invent a new possibility by looking at the whole issue differently with new eyes. And what gratitude always does when you're grateful is it lets you look at not like just rose-colored glasses eyes or something like that, but the state of gratitude puts you emotionally and energetically and intellectually into a mode where you're thinking. Your logical thinking is sorting things that it remembers and knows that are good, that are helpful, that you have gratitude about. You're drawing that frequency. And even more powerfully, the right brain is thinking things that were never thought before. The right brain is inventing and creating possibilities that never existed. And they're in the frequency of something to be grateful for. So they are something wonderful. And this is how it actually works. This is how we become more than what we were, and how problems cause us to create new solutions that we just never could have dreamed of before. And life also, it has to be said, in understanding this process of this new style of thinking that I'm really describing and how we get there, life is a process. So it takes steps. Sometimes things happen in a flood. I mean, sometimes they just do, and it looks like magic, and things just, you know, just on one incident, the whole issue turns, and everything is set anew, and it's great. But many times, even when we have that, there are moments of, it's like the up-down, you know. You assess the problem, you go, oh dear, you know, it doesn't look so good. Then you let yourself be filled with gratitude, and then you look at the problem again, and then it looks better. Then it looks like, oh, well, you know, it doesn't matter that much as I'm making it matter. You know, it's something that I could let go, and nothing at all will be bad. Or it's something that now I see it with different eyes, and maybe it'll come another way, or maybe it'll be a transformed request. You'll ask for something entirely different. You'll work on something entirely different, and this sets a new tone. So like the man with his mother at Thanksgiving dinner, he's setting a new tone. He's saying, I'm a grown-up person. I will speak to you with loving kindness and respect, but when you are rude, I won't take it. And what I found when I told the story, and I tell it often, especially around Thanksgiving and Christmas, but I have gotten many stories back from people who more or less tried this change. And what was the most astounding response, and I would say the majority response, is that the mother doesn't have the conniption that this man envisioned she would have. The mother is sort of stunned. And I remember this one lady saying to me, she said, her mother stopped and said, you know, honey, you're absolutely right. I don't know what possessed me to talk to you like that. Of course you can cut it. And that was it. I mean, it's like, and she had been living with this replay that had become so ingrained it was an absolute reality, because she replayed how it would be. And probably at one point in her life, that was how it would be. But things have changed and moved on, but she kept the script and kept it running and kept the energy of it running. And so one of the things that gratitude does is it doesn't make you feel bad that you have negative scripts. It doesn't say, don't think of pink elephants, you know, that old expression that if you tell somebody not to think of pink elephants, all they can think of is pink elephants. Our pink elephants. So what we really need to do is just fill ourselves with a different energy and still have our logic operating. So we're keeping track of facts, but we're adding new facts. And we're adding a new attitude to looking at the facts. And we're creating a distance that's very big between the not seeing the problem or the denial, and then by finally seeing it, being saddened or in despair because it was so bad you didn't want to look at it. So what happens is that all gets changed. And what we end up doing is having less denial because everything seems like it's going to bring some kind of insight. Because if a problem exists, something needs to be fixed and new creative thought needs to be generated, and you can't do it unless you look at the problem. So denial kind of goes out the window. It's not too helpful. It's like, you know, being blindfolded. One of the images I used to use about that, what denial does for us, it's like, you know the old saying about the ostrich putting their head in the sand? Well, of course, I don't really think ostriches actually do that. They're probably too smart to really do that. Although many animals, like horses and so on, need blinders so as not to be distracted. But that's because they've given over their power to you to take care of them, and so then it's all right. But anyway, the image is of the ostrich putting their head in the sand. And one of the things I always say is whenever you feel like you're doing that, think of the image of the ostrich, and his bottom is right up in the air, and it's a good way to get a whack in the rear end because you're not looking. And you've got your head down and your bottom up, and you're just not paying attention to anything. And it's a tempting target. So it, on top of doesn't help you because it disconnects you from solving problems, it puts you in more danger. It puts you in more hassle. It sets you up to blindly fall into problems and get stuck in situations where problems will get you. So denial is truly not helpful. Look, having said that, it exists for a very real psychological reason, and we need to be grateful for that, that the reason denial exists is that our brains are huge and complicated and can hold so much information, but they can take in and hold and observe more than we know how to process yet. And this has been true for the last, you know, 50,000 years that we've been in this body, this type of human being that we are. So we're so young. we haven't been here very long at all, and we've made dreadful mistakes by not knowing enough, by having immature intuitive mind that envisions demons and goblins and things that talk and go bump in the night. So we have lots of issues and fears and really living examples of disasters that have happened that we feel powerless over. But as we begin to study and understand and expand, and even just understanding DNA has been such a wonderful thing. So the easy people to project crimes on, so we had all these innocent people in prison, and all the people with titles, you know, like judge or policeman or minister, who could commit the crimes, and nobody would think they did it because they had this title, and they could easily project it onto someone else who was of a race or a social level that they could get easily blamed. Or maybe an eccentric person who was feared already, or a grumpy person who was already not liked and so an easy target. So we can be grateful that every day we are discovering things that make us more awake and make living in a sort of totalitarian trap that most of humanity had to live in, which was called their village. And while it could be wonderful and nurturing and protective, it could also be devastatingly unjust and cruel. But all of these problems are for us to discover who we are, what's going on, how our brain works, what's real, what isn't, what the nature of real is, because it may be real, but we may completely misunderstand how something actually is, even though we do get it's real, we just may not understand its real nature. And an interesting paradox, being grateful sets you up to see, or if not see, though it often does that, certainly in the end, it sets you up to participate in the world, in life, in the universe, in a way that in 100,000 ways that you cannot know or delineate, it sets things up to come your way, to be drawn, that fulfill the state of energy that gratitude is. This, is, I think, is how it works. And I've been saying lately to a number of people, one of my very favorite lines in the movies is from the movie Shakespeare in Love. And in Shakespeare in Love, there's a, I think they say it three times, the same line. I only really remember this one scene very clearly, and it was they were going to be kicked out of their theater. They didn't have the money to pay for it. And the guy that's the producer and the director, I guess, the two of them together are, and he runs up and he says to the guy who's the producer, he says, well, did you, the producer says to him, oh, it's all going to be all right. And the guy says, oh, great. He said, did you get the money? And he says, no. And he says, well, how do you know it's going to be all right? And the fellow says, shakes his head slightly, and he says, it's a mystery. I don't know. It's a mystery. But it's going to be all right. And the way he says, it's a mystery, and it's going to be all right, just still to this moment gives me goosebumps. Because this is what I've been teaching for 35 years. There's another dimension to reality that doesn't adhere to the rules of the linear mind. It adheres to the rules of the intuitive mind. And the intuitive mind, when mature, is inspirational in its energetic mode. It's an energy frequency mind that can hold spatial holes. It can see the big picture. It can see imagery and color. And it creates music, and it creates music that never was before. And so it generates not only creativity, which by literal definition means something that wasn't there before and then is. Creativity isn't getting the right answer on the test. The people who get all the right answers on the test usually aren't too creative, though they could be very, very smart and contort themselves to obey the rules of the test, even though it's not the answer they'd give. Because if you're creative, you think of other things. And often you don't finish tests because you wander off thinking of other things. This is something all discouraged, of course, in school. And in our culture, we don't even understand the full meaning of the word intelligence. And precisely because I believe one of the most powerful parts of intelligence is creativity. And creativity is out of nothing something. And it comes, really, I think, from the Bible, where Genesis, the word Genesis, means where genius comes from, the genius being that superb kind of intelligence that comes up with something really new. Well, the creative power of in Genesis is God creating the heaven and the earth and life and on the world. And it starts out, in the beginning was the Word. And in the beginning was the Word. The Word is, even in the translation from the Greek, I believe it's logos. And logos doesn't really mean word. It's a combination of, like, word, which is a vibrational noise, which has meaning. And logos is a symbol that's like a title, or it's like a brand, you know. You see a brand label, and it's a little picture, but you know what it represents. It's their logo. And so the logos is something spatial, visual, an image that holds lots of information that, like a word, can hold an image in your mind. So what we're really talking in the beginning was the image and the frequency, the vibration. And the first words spoken were, "Let there be light." And if then there's light, and then the light and the words together created matter, the heaven and the earth. And I think about physics, modern day physics, that says first there was a frequency, and the frequency created light, and the frequency and light together created the Big Bang, and we had all this matter. And that in our bodies, every single one of us are molecules and atoms, not molecules, atoms from stars. And they're in us. And we're part of it. We're part of that explosion. We're part of that connection. Not only our DNA, are we so similar to one another, we almost really literally are brothers and sisters, all of us. All the races are just silly, superficial things, though meaningful. I shouldn't say silly. I say silly in the sense of keeping us separate, but not silly in the sense of being unique and little unique idiosyncrasies and talents, and we're all unique and idiosyncratically different from one another, and that's all wondrous. That's all good. So there's a paradox in it. And all of this is about being grateful. We're grateful there was a Big Bang. We're grateful there's a consciousness we might call God, or the harmony of the universe, or the sentience that holds the universe together, the laws of nature, that nature is God's nature. However it fits for someone, you know, whatever inspires them and nurtures them and allows them to keep growing and do things by an internal yardstick that says wholesome, kind. And notice the disparity. If you think you have an ideal that's wholesome and kind, but you want to do something harmful and cruel in order to maintain the wholesome and kind, then you have to go back and think again and be grateful you can. Be grateful that your mind will happily, if given the problem, work on it until you find a solution that is healing and healthy. And that's the wonder of where we're going. That's what I call the evolutionary leap. We're going to take a little break right now, and in a moment we'll be right back and we'll talk more about this new kind of thinking and gratitude. I'm Patricia Sun, and this is Trust the Problem. We'll be right back.
Trust the Problem is sponsored by a nonprofit organization, the Institute of Communication for Understanding, ICU. We rely on you, our listeners, for donations to keep us on the air. To help, please visit patriciasun.com and receive a free Can't Take Sides When You Know the Earth is Round t-shirt with your donation. Thank you.
Welcome back to Trust the Problem. And now, Patricia.
Welcome back to Trust the Problem. I'm Patricia Sun, and we're having our discussion and thought about gratitude on Thanksgiving Day, and not that it is that today, but it's coming up soon. And every day being grateful is really a great power. It's an asset we can carry within us, and it speeds up this thing I call the evolutionary leap that I think we're all participating in, and that we're all under a lot of stress right now. Not only because of the problems in the world, but that we see so much of the problems in the world. And not only that, but because we personally, individually, as little entities, are also going through huge transformation inside ourselves. And we seem to see huge problems and small problems and potential problems that can just devastate us. And the antidote is to stay present in the moment, not deny those other things. You don't have to not know about them. You have to just not dwell on them. You have to be aware of them. And then be filled with gratitude for every single thing you have, and every person, and every loving situation, and every talent, and every insight you've ever had. And be delighted and grateful that life is such a thing as to cause you to always grow and discover something new. This is the next piece. And so often in the times of the holidays, when we're supposed to be celebrating the joys of our religion or our families, or as with Thanksgiving, not only the joys of our families, but that America is such a kind of wondrous place where it has everyone. And Thanksgiving Day celebrated the day when the native people saved the lives of the people who came from Europe. And fed them and taught them how to survive the winters. And that's what the first Thanksgiving was supposed to be for. And it's amazing to me how we forget that gratitude. And we forget that some of the amazing qualities about Native American people, when they are still, and even when they're not, in touch with their culture or their energetic makeup of their roots, they have a wondrously beautiful connection to nature that is wondrous and beautiful because of the sincerity of it, the innocence of it, the acceptance of that all nature speaks to them through the Great Spirit, and all nature's part of the Great Spirit, and that the Great Spirit's in all of us, and that they failed living up to their greatest inspirations doesn't mean, they didn't have them, just as we've failed, the way Christians fail horrifically at living up to Jesus' example, and I would even say Buddhists who do a better job than most also fail at really even realizing the sweet freedom and innocence while still staying present with problems and not having that. You see, it's not that you avoid problems, though that's okay too sometimes. It's that you face them with a different energy so they become fruitful. And that's, of course, my message all the time. And being grateful about life itself prodding you along, rather than really, you know what, that we usually get. But being able to really sort of stay there present and say, yeah, I don't like this, and this is not nice, and this was not good. But you know what? What is this making me do? What do I have to look at here? What makes this change? What makes this look different? What feeling am I missing that I used to have that I knew was good? What feeling is being shoved aside because I'm feeling bad? And I think of people like Nelson Mandela, who went into prison very angry, very linear thinking, And with those decades in prison, used them to heal himself and to become more of who he really is and to transcend the anger and the fear. He used it. And he's the first to say so. And I'm not saying we should put people in prison so they can use that. No, we should not. But wherever we find ourselves in injustice or in difficulty, there are ways to generate new energy inside ourselves that either take us away or make us make use of where we are in such a way as we become a transformative person to the people around us, because we've already transformed ourselves to a degree. Or sometimes we just borrow good ideas that are transformative and we're not living them, and we do it maybe to get credit or to have power over people. But still built into that is the possibility of really living, you know, practicing what you preach, really living what you are saying is good. And that always takes, as one of those great steps in AA, it takes first, of course, the step of admitting it, and then trying to rectify it, trying to redeem the wrong. And in that effort, if it doesn't harm anyone, and it doesn't harm you, and it doesn't harm other people, look for a way to redeem the energy. It doesn't have to be a linear redemption. It doesn't mean you have to go say mea culpa, though sometimes you do have to do that. But sometimes it's just being so filled with gratitude that you've realized it, and that you, whatever you gained by taking from someone else, or if you harm them out of jealousy, you come to them and say, you had so many things that were so good, and I was jealous and weak, and I want you to know how wonderful you are. And then you help the person who is injured and hurt by your anger or your stealing or your harming of them. This is the gratitude in motion, and it is redeeming. And it's lighter-hearted than sort of my fault, because that's that fault stuff again, you know, my blame, guilt. You know, there's a little bit of guilt that's necessary, and we need it to be awake. We need it to say, oh my goodness, I'm sorry, I didn't realize I was hurting you. Or worse, I realized I was hurting you because I felt inadequate. And those are the kinds of things that cause us to grow. And we can be grateful that that's reality instead of at all costs going to keep things secret. And I think of all the people in the administration who've gone through all this corruption stuff, and there's so many, and there's so many more that are not even being covered. And they, I think Cunningham was like the poster child for patriotism, I heard a commentator say. And then he became this, you know, just grotesque thief, Rolls Royces. I mean, who needs a Rolls Royce? I mean, I'm sorry, Rolls Royce makers. It's fine if you like them and you have them, but you certainly don't need to steal from somebody to get one. And you don't need to betray your whole purpose. And, but anyway, I think of Duke Cunningham and how he's crying and he's sorry and he's going to prison. And why are we so needful of so many things? I mean, I like things. I appreciate that. And it's okay to have things. It's not that things are bad or wrong. They're not. But when they replace connection with people, and they replace new creative solutions, so things can be more sparse, but you can actually create a healthier world in some other ways, all these concepts are born of the attitude and state and heart embrace of gratitude. Because gratitude is a physical state. It's a lot like love. It's probably an aspect of love, it's fair to say. And when we let gratitude be the core energy in our heart, as we walk through life and choose things and do things. If you miss one thing but you get another, you're grateful for the one you got. And it doesn't mean you can't take intellectual note of why you thought you liked the other one. Maybe it'll show up in another item somewhere else down the road, and that one wasn't to be yours, that wasn't to be the one. And maybe it has other liabilities that you didn't see that, you know, you got saved from by not getting it. So there's the attitude of gratitude puts your mind, your linear mind, your logical mind, and your intuitive mind into a different mode. For the logical mind, the attitude of gratitude puts you into cataloging and seeking and remembering and finding and sorting all the many benefits you get from being alive and have gotten from the world and people and God and nature and life itself. And you start, when you start cataloging those, keeping conscious track of them, they way outweigh. There are many more of them than there are things we don't like. And we begin to develop a sense of self-esteem, a sense of strength, a sense of confidence, a sense of belonging. All of this by letting your mind go towards gratitude. Now, when it's the logical linear mind. When you have the intuitive mind going towards gratitude, it is filled with a spirit that allows inspiration to come more naturally, more easily. Because the right brain thinks in a sort of spiritual way. It is the out of nothing something kind of energy, not the nailing down linearness of the logical mind. And so, like it's a mystery, it will just come. There is a kind of certainty called intuition that sometimes people call hope or faith. But hope and faith, I think, have been very misused, like so many really good words that are so awesomely good that we have to mess them up. We just can't stand them being so good. But hope, for instance, is when you allow that frequency to exist, you have a sense, you are inspired about what is wonderful, and you put out that energy like a glow from your heart so that you are filled with it. It's like, I used to say, don't have expectations, but be filled with expectancy. To not have an expectation means you haven't locked it up and limited what you can have. To be aware enough so that you can see that there are many things that could be expected and some you could not possibly even imagine, be filled with expectancy. And that brings the energy of the goodwill that hope is, hoping for what is good. And faith is a kind of intuition, an intuitional knowledge that something not only is possible and even not only probable, but is going to happen. And when I say, and it is going to happen, it isn't necessarily going to happen that you'll get a raise or you'll get a new car or you'll end up in relationship with this person you think you want to be with right now. Though that could happen too, but that's not what I mean by it. What it is faith. I stopped to say this, and I really want to. I'm going to say what I want to say, but it's so hackneyed and so contaminated by being misused, I think, for so long. But it's having faith in God. It's having faith in the unfolding of everything. That there is that God does work in mysterious ways. That all that is true and is wonders to behold. And all of that is true. But what happened is we used that as a shorthand without really living it or believing it to kind of control and manipulate people and to be right. And the minute you stop living it, the light goes out, the radiance inside the person isn't there, and you actually end up sort of being a scold or a preachy preacher, you know, there's great preachers and there's preachy preachers. And I call it Hopey Hope. When you have Hopey Hope, it's like, oh, I hope it worked out, it worked out, it worked. But it's not really, you know. Hope is flooding yourself with the wondrous, boundless sense of what alive can bring when filled with love and seeking health and earnestness. Wow, that brings something else. And it is a mystery. And you don't often get to know where you're going or how it's going to happen. Sometimes you know where you're going without a clue as to how you'll get there. And you have to just keep bouncing along the road. And it's, you know, one step up and two steps back and three steps up and one step down and four steps up and two steps back. And that's the way it goes. That's life. And life doesn't work in a straight line because it would be very boring, for one. And life would not be very rich. All the organic interfaces, all the beyond numbers, the Google of Googles number of connections and possibilities that all these connections webbed together, connected, yet individual, constantly evolving and changing. That's the universe. That's our world. That's why we are foolish to try to gain control over other people and to have totalitarian governments and not trust the flow of democracy. It'll make a mess. Yeah, it will. And then it will self-correct, and it will have learned from the mess and the self-correction and the journey of doing it what was important to remember. And that's sort of where we are now. We need to be grateful for this country. We need to be grateful to our founding fathers. We need to be grateful for our Constitution. We even need to be grateful that we have an administration who knew so little about all of that, that they made very big mistakes. We need to, and I don't say that, you know, like, a, you know, it sounds like a backhand compliment or a nasty, sort of sneaky way to say something. I don't mean that. I mean they literally don't know and have their own psychological wounds and therefore were not up to living the heritage. And very few people are. It happens very seldom. And the best we get is a little bit here and there, and it's quite nice and quite remarkable. But this was a particularly inept combination. And perhaps that reflects the country. We've become particularly disconnected and therefore inept at understanding democracy and the communication necessary and the freedom of the press and earnestness and journalism and helping the poor and taking good care of children and elderly people and providing jobs and seeking ways to protect the atmosphere and the water and the earth as we use our resources, our natural and otherwise resources, to create and take care of ourselves and grow. This is all a wondrous opportunity. And we're so close. Corrections can be so huge, so fast nowadays, just as disasters can be. But, you know, we do see disasters coming even though we close our eyes, and when they start accumulating and crashing down on us so we can't stop it, still there's options. There's always other options that will turn us around. And we just have to wake up, and that's the exciting thing of being alive right now. And when it comes to families and our children and our parents and our friends and our neighbors and our spouses and our lovers and our the people that we know, that we care about, and people we don't know that we care about, and people we know who we don't like, and people who we have as archetypes out there that we don't like or do like. All of it is grist for the mill of this transformative, I call it living on the growing edge. I called it living on the growing edge for 30 years because there is a kind of edge you walk on, and it's always growing. It's not a razor edge of uh-oh and fearfulness at like the razor's edge. And it is a growing edge. and it is constantly evolving. And the image came to me when I saw a video of the hair cells of roots growing in soil, the root cells, and like one cell at a time, they'd bubble up and work their way between the teeny tiny little, looked like little mountains, little boulders, as the little hair cells work their way to absorbing nutrients and water and growing. And it's like the tip of the root, you know, and it would just grow and then go to the right, then to the left, then up and then down, and then wider and then flatter and then rounder. And it would just do what it needed to do as it went along with the reality it was in. And it's like an oak tree. You know, all oak trees that are the same species, let's say, or variety, are oak trees. And they're all different. They're all the same, but they're all different. No one is identical to another because no one sits in the exact same environment. And, of course, this is true of people. And when we appreciate that and live on that growing edge, knowing that it is our choice, our attitude choice, of gratitude and joy and goodwill that creates the direction and health of that root. And it creates reality. It creates how we're anchored in reality. It creates and affects the rest of the environment. And with human beings, we are telepathic. It's one of those wonderful things that we have as an intelligence and an ability that we've kind of tried to destroy almost because we're so fearful of what people will know about us that we bombard children telepathically with the hopelessness that they can be and that it's defective and they're wrong and they're bad and all this weird energy people have around telepathy. And of course telepathy is also made too hard, too concrete. It's not like picking up a telephone. It is a soft empathy. It's aligning on a particular issue at a particular moment with the openness of your mind and your heart and your body with another person who's open at that moment or in extremists of some kind and you care about them. And there's a connection. And it happens. And then there's people who have this a lot, you know, and it's a treasure in this earth, and we should respect it and nurture it. And all of that is to be grateful for, and all the potential we have that we're still unfolding. Be grateful. We have almost endless potential. It's not almost. We do. We have endless potential. And you have it in this lifetime. You even have it in this day. But certainly in your life, you have an endless potential as you join the big picture and how things go and where they go. And the interesting thing over and over again is the power that makes it wholesome is the goodwill and the gratitude, the attitude of that energy. And your energetic attitude is a power, it always is, and you can see people who are millionaires and billionaires who are, you know, always trying to tell you how to be greedy and how to make a lot of money, too, so you can be like them. But, you know, maybe you don't want to be like them. Maybe there is a deeper, richer, fuller part of life than having just so much stuff and having to control it and manipulate to keep it and be absorbed about it. And the disdain they have for people who don't have what they have, and they say, I have this building, and I have this boat, and I have this plane, and I have this. It gets so silly, you know, and then you want this label, and this brand, and this thing, and this that thing. And again, I'm not against things. I mean, I love beautiful things. I think having beauty around you that people have worked to create is a respect for all that workmanship and appreciation of it, and beauty itself. It's a frequency and a resonance that makes us focus in a particular way that's refined and lovely. So, no, it's not that don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's just that a lot of times people don't even get a chance to enjoy the beauty. It's just acquisition that they enjoy. And sometimes that's their talent, and that's okay, too. If it were held in a context, meaning a culture, and an economic mentality that wasn't just blindly trying to get more money or more things, but was striving to create more beauty, more health, more aliveness, more creativity, more knowledge, more insight, more beautiful homes for people. So everyone had a kind of home they needed. So nature was protected. So the air was clean and the water was pure. We could be putting all that energy into doing that instead of the contrary, by our short-sightedness, our simplistic version of what we want to inspire. So by being grateful, what happens is that you automatically put yourself in that loving frequency. Because being grateful doesn't make you greedy. It doesn't make you mindlessly needy, which is the emotional state that causes all that offness that we're doing. And we all do it sometimes on some issue around something, some people more than others, but we've all been conditioned with it. Fair enough. I mean, that's okay. But the interesting thing is if you're grateful for everything you have, it opens you up to a tenderness and a depth of perception about what's going on around you. That's great that you just can absorb. It's that mystery quality. I don't know how it's going to work out, but it's a mystery. But it will. It's a mystery. And that's synchronicity. That's the meaningful coincidence in life, which is a very powerful part of our intelligence, which is to be receptive to allowing that to be awake in our experience in our lives. And it transforms what we can do and how creativity works. And it is part of the evolutionary leap. And as we are grateful that that exists, then we're not so powerless or hasty when we look like we don't have a solution, or we look like something's not forthcoming that we anticipated, or something someone promised, out loud by contract or just by implication. Whatever disappoints us, it can be fair that it disappoints you. Don't get me wrong. And you can say, that really disappoints me. I thought you said this. You know, there is a kind of accountability, but it's not an accountability that makes you the victim. It's a kind of accountability that makes you the reporter of that the person let down their end of the three-legged stool. You know, they took it away. And you'll just get another leg there to hold the stool balanced. So or you'll give them the opportunity to do it if they want to. And you can tell by how much they recognize what they've done that's not okay, that they actually will do that. And if they don't, if they're just trying to not sound guilty and be expedient, say, work on it a little more. I don't think that there's enough there for that to happen, and go get it someplace else. It's really amazing the amount of options that we have. And gratitude is just, as I say, a form of love, a form of biological, spiritual energy that you generate in your body merely by being aware. And this is one of the crucial needs we always have in making Trust the Problem work, to making it a fount of creativity. So I want to thank you very much. I hope you have a magnificent Thanksgiving. Enjoy it with great joy. And I send you much love. This is Patricia Sun, and you've been listening to Trust the Problem.
You've been listening to Trust the Problem with Patricia Sun. This program and its content is copywritten to Patricia Sun, all rights reserved, 2006.